Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about news out of Disney's D23, the very sad loss of Hayden Panettiere, and my meeting of Kurt frickin' Russell. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
What's up, Mr. I met my super idol dude.
I did. I met my movie daddy. My movie daddy, Kurt Russell.
Did he spank you as he walked away?
Okay, don't make it weird, dude. Don't make it weird. It's just going to be Troy and I this week. Manna was supposed to be here, but she got called into work short notice. So we are not going to reschedule. We're just going to go forward because it's D23 news. I think we want to get out a little sooner than the normal Friday release. So we're coming out with that next week.
I don't know if we have to do that necessarily because it's going to take Disney like 5 years to put any of this shit out anyway.
Damn, son. I don't want to be late. You know, you don't want to be late. You don't want to be late.
Late. It's like coming in 2028. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming in 2028.
There's a lot. You know, and Marvel keeps saying, we've got stuff dated to 2042. I'm like, sure you do. How's Blade coming? Yeah. Just stop. Stop dating stuff so far out, man. A year or two, okay, fine. Ghost Rider is dated, so that's cool. We got that coming out in 2028. I'm excited. That's like July, and I think Black Panther 3 is also in December of that year, so 2028 is going to be great. Next year, I think Marvel only has the Secret Wars in the theater.
More than enough.
It is, yeah. I mean... Yeah.
One good movie a year is all you need.
Relax, all right? That's not true. I need more. I need lots of more. I need more Kurt Russell movies. That's what I need, you know what I mean? We're going to also have a couple clips from... The Kurt Russell panel will be when I talk about that experience. But I do want to shout, you know, she would have got a shout out if she showed up, but she didn't show up. Amanda actually got me that as a birthday gift. So I want to give her a proper shout out. So if it wasn't for her, I'm far too cheap to have paid for that opportunity to meet Kurt Russell. So thank you, Amanda. I do appreciate that.
This is the second time she's done that for you.
Gotten me Kurt Russell too? I don't think so.
She got you a cameo for Mr. Dulé Hill.
That's
after she had gotten you the ability to meet them in person, both him and James Rhoda.
Didn't you give me the Dulé Hill?
No, I think that was Amanda.
I swear it was you.
No.
Well, I've been lauding your gift for so long. I don't know what I feel a bit terrible now.
You got me the 7-minute cameo from John Noble.
That's right.
That was cool. That's seven minutes.
It was very good. I'm pretty sure that he forgot he was doing a cameo. Like he legit just stroked out. I don't know what that was, but he just kept going and going and going.
He just bounced between characters. It was amazing.
He did. And Kyle Nolan, if you're listening, we would have called you for quick fill-in. We had 5 minutes notice. It just wouldn't have been fair. So just Troy and I, we've done this before. We've done this for years. We'll be fine. Are you excited? You're a big Disney nut. So are you excited about, for anyone that doesn't know, I should say, because there are people that have no idea what this is. D23 is Disney's like Comic-Con, their own personal
including
Comic-Con.
Amanda, apparently.
Yeah, she had no idea what it was.
She had no idea what D23 is. I was like, what hole have you been living under?
She's just living her own world, man.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't believe that I almost fell out of my chair.
I mean, it's literally like their own Comic-Con. They save all their big reveals. They don't go to Comic-Con for them necessarily anymore. They drop them here.
Yeah, and it's a lot of things. People are going is owning their own presentations, right? Apple does that. Nintendo does that. Sony does that, right? State of Play. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you control the narrative that way. And I think it's kind of an interesting thing to do, but I don't think anything comes close to what a D23 presentation is. The 23, for those that don't know, is for 1923 when Walt Disney came to California and founded the company initially. So that's the 23 and the D23. And D23 is the fan club.
Say it again. What is it?
It's when Walt came to California in 1923 and founded the company. That's what the 23 is for in D23.
Okay. That's cool to know. Good information. See? Bringing the knowledge. I didn't know that. You know what I did know? Kurt Russell used to hang out with Walt Disney. I'm just tying it all together. Just so you're keeping up. You know, I'm just saying. Like he used to be buddies. They used to hang out. He looked up to him as like his grandpa, is what he said.
He did not do a cool animatronic musical number, though, that Neil Patrick Harris did while on stage at D23.
Is that what he did?
Amazing. Yeah, it was a really great performance. It was really funny.
Now, I caught up on the news online, obviously. I didn't watch it live. Did you watch it somewhere?
I watched the clips on Instagram.
Gotcha. Okay. So you didn't go. Because, I mean, it wouldn't be surprised if you spent, like, your mortgage to go to this thing.
No, but former sub-host Jeremiah Panhorst that we used to work with over does like the Mickey Mouse podcast over on Golden Spiral Media. Him and his wife went one of the days to the convention floor at D23.
Did they rave about it?
Yeah, shopped all kinds of good merch, lots of fun eats, the typical Disney, you know, overpay for everything.
Why didn't we ask him to come on? He's been on, he's hosted before.
Nah, just again, 5-minute notice. He's that's true. Two different time zones.
Thanks a lot, Amanda.
Yeah.
Jeez, you're lucky you got me that gift. That's all I'm saying. Well, you ready to talk about some of the big news that came out of this event? Yeah,
probably the biggest news is the theme park is expanding.
You're excited about this. I can tell.
Actually, partially, yes. My biggest thing is I'm not a big Magic Kingdom Disney World fan because everybody goes to Orlando and it is crowded AF.
It's so busy. It's so, I was just there in July for a work event and my God, so many people.
Yeah. Like there's a sweet spot that is like the first 2 weeks of December, like right after Thanksgiving when the kids go back to school and before winter break. Those 2 weeks are like the best 2 weeks to go to Disney. In that first 2 weeks in December, you get the Christmas stuff is all decorated and you see the Christmas parade. But yeah, this is like a real big expansion for them. This is going to be on the west side of the park, just past Big Thunder Mountain, kind of beyond Tatiana's Bayou Ride. Used to be Splash Mountain. So back there is where this new area is going to be, about the size of Galaxy's Edge in scale. And it's going to be a whole new land surrounded by the villains. Finally, the villains get their day. Excited. And literally could think about walking around a themed area and you get to listen to Descendants soundtrack constantly. That'd be cool.
I gotta tell you, I've been to Disney World a couple times and I'm good. I don't know if I ever need to go back, but what I will say is like this expansion, this villains land is what they're calling it, is going to match the scale of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. So that's huge. And it's going to feature a roller coaster looping around Maleficent's fortress and a dark boat ride through a magic mirror realm. I mean, everything about it sounds very, very cool. And I like how they're highlighting the villains. I don't know if that's a good thing for Disney, because Disney's usually all about happy and joy and making sure that everybody feels beloved. I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, the park does really cool little side mantras, if you will. Like, I think, you know, if the characters hug a kid, they don't let go until the kid lets go. That's one of their Disney mantras. Like, they make sure that goes. There's also the thing that if you see a character in the park, one place, it won't be anywhere else in the park at that same time, because they don't want anyone to accidentally videotape the same character twice to kill that illusion. I mean, Disney really goes all in on the theme park experience.
Yeah, and the villains don't come out very often as character meets and greets. So when they come out, it's like a big deal and people like rush up, right, to go meet Captain Hook and go run up and meet Maleficent. And so to have them have their own area and be able to be out in the park all day in this land, I think that's just really freaking cool, because some of the villains are actually really fun characters to get pictures with.
I love Disney villains. I mean, I think that'd be it. I still want to see Star Wars. I haven't been there for that. I want to go see that. I do want, if once this is built, I might go like and just do both of them at the same time.
And you're getting the better option, because when by the time you get to go see Star Wars, it's no longer strictly in the post-quels era, mm-hmm. right? The new movies, they're actually reincorporating Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Chewbacca and Darth Vader into the land. They backed up the story a little bit in the time. We're not just in the Rey and Finn time period, which is really cool.
Is that most of what's been there right now? Like, it's mostly Rey and Finn and stuff?
Yeah, it's been Rey, Finn, Kylo Ren, the First Order.
Not thinking, Luke and Han and what? Nope. That's ridiculous. Well, now I'm glad I haven't gone yet.
Yeah.
I'll go later.
You're going at the better time. You like to go to the cantina and maybe get shot by Han. Who knows?
Oh, he better shoot first. That's all I'm saying. He better. All right, so now we move into some of the studio releases. You take this. It's animated. I'm not going to see probably any of these first day, so you might as well like get excited about them.
Well, I mean, Coco 2, it was the big one. Concept art was revealed. Right, a teenage Miguel will come and return. The original villain will also be back. That's not coming, though, till 2029, because they were spending all the time taking the Coco characters and incorporating them into the new Kingdom Hearts 4 video game, which I think is super cool. That's going to be a lot of fun. Pixar has announced that Incredibles 3 is going to be coming. Peter Soane will be back directing. That's going to be June of 2028. So, yes, like I said, a lot of time for this stuff to show up, actually.
I mean, you know that one's going to be... I mean, you can go with the cheat. It's going to be incredible, but it's going to be huge. I mean, that last movie was huge.
Huge. Hopefully, it'll feature the kids this time, since it featured the mom in the second movie.
I'm sure it will. Not.
Also, Frozen 3, like, nobody could see that coming. But there's going to be new songs, and there's going to be a new icy villain that's going to be out. And I believe Olaf gets a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's Gad was singing a song, whatever that love song is at the D23. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be Thanksgiving of 2027. And then Zootopia 3 is confirmed in early developments alongside updates for Zootopia 2. So, get ready for all of that. It's going to be fun.
Here's
good stuff on the animation side.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I'm very excited for people that are big fans of these. Coco, I loved. I thought that was actually a great movie. What I'm curious about, as somebody who's a big animation, especially Pixar fan, you love Pixar. Your Father's Day weekend, you constantly say you need a Pixar movie that weekend because it makes you feel like a real dad or something. Are you bummed that none of these are original? Like, none of these are original IP?
No, what I'm actually bummed about is the fact that they finally are opening in the next year or two the Monsters Door roller coaster that we've been asking for since the original Monsters, Inc. movie came out.
Okay.
And the fact that there isn't a Monsters 3 is really what actually pissed me off, because that's what I was hoping they were going to announce in conjunction with the roller coaster coming online, is that they were going to have a Monsters 3, since, you know, they've made 5 Toy Stories at this point. Like, why couldn't they make a third Monsters movie?
So you want more franchise. You want to just keep sequelizing the shit out of it. No more original properties. Let's just go.
Certain ones of them, right? I mean, Cars didn't really need a sequel, but by the third movie redeemed the second movie. The second movie is not really great. But the third movie was really a nice way to wrap up the Cars. I don't need more Cars, but Monsters seems like that's a really great fit, that we could come back to that world and do something like climate change related. You know, there's a lot of stuff they could talk about, you know, in the monster sense, that they could pull in from a real life world lesson at this point for the kids, you know, that are now in their 20s and 30s that watched the Monsters originally when they were children. Disposable income at the taking.
I'm trying to decide if I care about any of that.
Like, Coco 2 did super great. Like, Incredibles.
Coco,
like,
did. It's, yeah, not Coco 2 yet.
I could go either way with Incredibles 3. Like, Incredibles 2 was cool, but like,
yeah, I didn't love it. I didn't love it.
I didn't love it. Like, I loved the first one. The first one was so great.
First one was a fantastic film. And that's coming from a guy who doesn't like animated movies that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Incredibles 3, maybe it does like the Cars 3 thing where it kind of redeems it a little bit. I just want like fun heist, find bad guys, you know, make it like Batman and Spider-Man teaming up. That's kind of the movie I want.
Hang on. Batman and Spider-Man teaming up. Now we're talking. It's like the Punisher. It's all it is. So
yeah,
there's a rich Punisher. Like, Punisher is Batman if he was broke. So
yeah, take that model, but have it be the Incredibles doing the job.
Destitute Batman. That's the Punisher.
Don't make it like the Fantastic Four. That would be horrible.
Hobo Cop. All right. So moving on. That's a ripoff of a joke from Reacher. I stole that. All right. So I'd love to take credit for it. Somebody who hasn't watched Reacher, like, that's funny. No, I stole it. All right, Star Wars Starfighter, they showed off a scene, and you got to see Ryan Gosling and the kid he's going to be racing Starfighters with. I don't know if you, because they haven't actually released it online, but there is a cut you can see online if you find it. I did find it, and it doesn't give too much away. I mean, it feels very much like Ryan Gosling is a Starfighter, and he's going to take a kid under his wing, if you will. It's directed by Sean Levy. It comes Memorial Day weekend, and it happens after the recent Rey and Ren events, right? Isn't that when it takes place?
I believe that's true. I didn't get the exact timing on it, if it's like in the middle of 7, 8, 9 or if it comes after 9.
It comes after 5 years after the events of Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. So, okay. So 5 years later. And yeah. I got to tell you, so it's in the aftermath of the First Order's fall, and you know, you have Ryan Gosling, Amy Adams is in here. Matt Smith is going to be in this. It's Memorial Day weekend next year. This, honestly, this is probably one of the most excited projects from Star Wars I've seen in a long time. I'm really actually very excited about this. I love Sean Levy and I love Ryan Gosling. Why not?
And it's going to be different.
Yeah, it's going to be fighter jets, man. It better be. Do you remember that game? We're old. Remember the game in the 80s, like the Star Wars game where you were the TIE fighter or the X-Wing fighter or whatever. And it was just basically like you got to control one of them and you're in the cockpit. And pew, 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 pew. I want that. I want to feel like I'm in that ship, in that game. That's what I want to feel like.
In the 4D D-Box theater.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't know if I want to drive all the way to Chicago for that, but yeah, you get the gist. Yeah. Now the other...
I'm more excited for Ahsoka.
Okay. Well, you go ahead and take this one because I don't care.
I mean, I'm upset that it's taken this long for Ahsoka to return because Ahsoka is the only property that's actually touching Grand Admiral Thrawn, which is probably the best villain that we haven't tapped into in the entire Star Wars universe since the Emperor and Darth Vader and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, the fact that Ahsoka's finally coming back and we're actually going to get more tie-ins with Grand Admiral Thrawn, but the fact that we're going to get a little bit more flashbacks with Hayden Christian and tie back into that Clone Wars and Rebels era. Like, Clone Wars and Rebels is really some of the best Star Wars that we got in a void where we didn't have the movies. So if you haven't watched Clone Wars, especially if you haven't watched Rebels, because Rebels is a direct tie-in to Ahsoka's story, you want to pick that up before Ahsoka comes out for season two, which is, I believe...
January 20th.
Yep. Yeah, for early in the year.
That's like 3 years. It's been 3 years since the first season.
Which is ridiculous. That's the Disney problem.
It is.
And everything takes too long.
One of the reasons why I'm not excited about this is I liked the first season of Ahsoka. I actually thought it was fun, but I don't remember anything that happened now. So I would have to go back and rewatch the whole season. And I don't know if I want to, you know what I mean? And I think that's to their detriment. I think Disney should have got this moving a lot further. And I've heard they're cutting way back on shows so that they can move things faster, I suppose. I've heard Marvel shows, they're going to be cutting almost completely based on sources. I don't know if that's true or not, but I keep hearing that rumor.
Because remember, Ahsoka was taking place before 7, and really Ahsoka was still very young at that time. So like Rosario Dawson's not getting any younger. So I mean that really kind of plays into this too.
Hey, she's fine. You just go easy on Rosario. All right. She's fine. She's gonna hold up just fine. Unlike Kurt Russell. All right. So moving on to live action. I'm kidding. He looked great. So there's some live action projects, of course. I'm getting a little tired of Disney and the live action stuff, to be honest. Moana was a flop. I mean, it was. I'm not saying anything out of school. It was the live action Moana was a flop. It bombed. Now they have a live action Tangled movie coming, which is scheduled for March 31st, 2028 at this point. Lilo and Stitch 2 is dated for May 28th, 2028. So you got two within a couple months of each other. That seems too much. Yeah, too much.
Dumb.
And a Kingdom Hearts anime series was officially confirmed. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. Kingdom Hearts is a property that I really enjoyed when it first hit the market 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I forget which anniversary we're at. It was cool because it blended what was my favorite game at the time, Final Fantasy, and the Square Enix properties, and blended it with Disney content, right? With Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Goofy and all that. And then they started bringing in more and more of the different lands and the worlds, and you have Hercules and Toy Story
and Pixar. Sorry,
Alice in Wonderland makes a play. So it was cool, but the story of Kingdom Hearts is so complicated and convoluted that you need I don't even know if you could get by with an Oxford education to understand what the hell is going on in this series. It is really just that complex, and they've bifurcated it so much.
Can't they dumb it down?
They've tried to, like, there's like some YouTube videos that if you like watch it for like 25, 30 minutes, you might get a general gist of what's really going on. But even for me, it's complex, and I do complex stuff. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is going on? Who's playing what character? Lottie, how does this roll in?
I do complex stuff.
So in the true Disney, you know, vein of all of this, when we talk about like, I don't want to do homework with Marvel and I don't want to do homework with Star Wars. So like,
true.
This better be either retreading stuff I already know. so I don't have to try to figure out how this fits into the damn story I don't understand to begin with. Or it's got to be completely new shit that like figures out and answers a bunch of questions that have been open for years, because there's just a lot of plot holes at this point in time. I was really shocked they're coming out with a fourth game. I was like, I thought we were done after the third game.
I don't think games are ever done. The anime series, one thing I will say about anime is anime historically has been able to tackle much more intricate storylines than I would say your average cartoon or average animated project. Would you agree with that?
And upped it to the teenage / college age level content. It's not like Y7.
Yeah, it's much more intricate and complicated. So I think if that's the style you're going to go with, maybe it'll work. I mean, obviously give it time and see what comes of it. I can't imagine they're going to tackle it unless they have a story mapped out.
Yeah, I mean, if they can do it in the style of like some kind of like, you know, crossover with Ghibli meets Avatar Last Airbender type style, I think that'd be really fun to see. It's a really great property and idea and combo, and the story is really great. It's so complex after three and four, five, six. There's like these interlude episodes, which makes it so there's 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 2.8, 2.9, 3. It's like it's just complex. Go look it up, try to figure it out. If you understand it, let me know. Hit me up on the Discord.
Well, I want to mention the live action Tangled.
I'm excited.
I am for that one. I mean, that's one of the exceptions. I think that one will actually do very well. People love that, and it's been a long time. They didn't sequelize it to death. They didn't just have a sequel a couple of years ago like Moana did. That was just horrible timing. Solid cast. You got Tegan Croft as Rapunzel, Milo Manheim as Flynn Rider, Catherine Hahn as Mother Gothel. I've heard it both ways. Catriona Balfe as Queen Ariana. I mean, it's got a good cast, I think. It's got Diego Luna as Hawthorne. I know he's beloved in the Disney world. So, yeah.
It's all about the songs.
It's got a great soundtrack, for sure.
It's got a great soundtrack. And at last I see the light. They mess that song up, forget it. It's over.
Nobody wants to hear you sing.
I don't know. I do karaoke pretty good.
All right. Speaking of things I know I don't want to see, Vision Quest.
No.
It's coming. Why? October 14th. And they dropped the first look trailer for the Disney Plus series. It stars Paul Bettany and James Spader, who not only voices Ultron, but he's actually going to be like a figment. They're doing a very WandaVision take on it in terms of what Vision Quest is. And James Spader shows up in human form as a very, very old Red Reddington. I don't know if you got a chance to watch this trailer, but reminded me very much of WandaVision, and I just have a hard time caring about this at all. I think it's been too long.
Yeah, it doesn't fit into where we're at right now. Right now, we're at the point of, okay, Doomsday, finish the multiverse, bring on the X-Men. That's where we're at. Yep. I don't need to go backward. I need to go forward.
Yep. Yeah, well, we'll see what they end up doing with it. The premise is it focuses on White Vision, who's rebuilt. And he's given the original Vision's memories before he flew away, if you remember that. Well, now he's in kind of this mind palace, and he's trying to regain his identity. That's what's going on. So it feels like a series just to justify how he becomes the person he was before he died.
Right.
Before he was reincarnated as White Vision. That's too far removed
from WandaVision.
Yeah, it is. It was too long ago. I just don't think anyone's going to really care. And honestly, I don't think many of the Marvel shows have been very good. I think Daredevil's probably going to be one of the last ones you see. That's my two cents. You think what you want.
I'm Bob Iger. That's what I would be doing.
He's not there anymore. He gone, man.
I know. Now he is. Again.
He's a Disney legend now. But that premieres on October 14th. Then we got a new trailer for Avengers Doomsday. And, you know, it showed the assembly of the team against Dr. Doom. Yes. And it also gave a little bit more detail in terms of Dr. Doom. And I got to say, I was really turned off with the first trailer because I felt like Dr. Doom just sounded like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Robert Downey Jr. doing the character from Tropic Thunder, doing the character played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was a mishmash of those characters. I felt like it was all over the place. And it was supposed to be Hungarian, but was it? Because it really sounded like Schwarzenegger. This, I feel like I finally have a little bit more weight and depth, and it makes me, okay. We've got Sentinels, we've got Dr. Doom, we've got, what did you think? Reed Richards going off on Victor. What did you think?
I thought it was good. Like I'm excited for that chapter because I think it's going to close something up and open up something new that people are actually excited for. Secret Wars is a lot of fun. So I think when people get into that Secret Wars plotline and the X-Men start showing up in the MCU, I think that's going to be a lot more interesting, unlike the space we had between Endgame and where we are now.
Are you getting excited for it? Like, legitimately?
Yeah, legitimately. Like, I'm excited to see, like, original X-Men show up, even if they're on the screen for, like, 2 minutes. Like, I don't care. It's like, it's Magneto and it's Xavier. And
what did you think
of James Marsden?
They had a video of Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds, you know, taunting him, basically saying, ask him if they have any room in this movie, da 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 da. So what did you think about this? I mean, obviously you're going to get Hugh Jackman and Wolverine and Deadpool in this or Secret Wars, which comes out next year.
Yeah.
How much of that do you want? Because I'd much rather have Deadpool and Wolverine too, honestly. But I think they will liven it up if they show up.
I think they have to work in somehow in order to close the loop on that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And either put Deadpool to rest for a little bit, and then there's something that happens that either loses powers or changes or what have you. So, I mean, there's a lot of different storylines that you could play off of the two of them coming back together again. I mean, yes, another movie would be absolutely freaking fantastic.
I wish they would.
But I think with momentum you got from the Spidey, you know, and everything that happened in Spider-Man, Brand New Day, like you got to ride that wave and start moving in that direction.
You do. And speaking of, it's confirmed. If you haven't seen Spider-Man, skip ahead 2 minutes, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. But Sadie Sink is playing Jean Grey. That's been confirmed and announced publicly. I'm not spoiling anything. It's confirmed and announced. And here's the rest of the cast for the X-Men. We have Cyclops, or Scott Summers, is played by Kit Connor. He was in Heartstopper. You got Professor Xavier, who's played by Christopher Abbott. He was in Poor Things. He was also in, I think, Wolfman. He's kind of an odd actor. It's an interesting choice for Professor Xavier. I'm kind of curious how that one works out. We have Samara Weaving for Emma Frost. We already talked about her. I'm so excited. We have Maya Boyd from Deadbeat playing Storm. And I'm coming back to the big one here in a second.
Yeah.
You've got Adam Driver, who was in Star Wars, obviously. He's got some Disney connections. And he's going to play Nathaniel Milbury, who's Mr. Sinister, who's going to be the film's primary antagonist. And before we move on to the last one, what do you think of that?
I think it's great.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Adam Driver's got a really great range. I think sometimes people give him a little bit of like miscred because of the Kylo Ren and all the slack he got there. But you watch him in any other stuff that he's done, he's a great actor.
He can be a great actor, yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be it's going to be fun for him to be able to play an actual like antagonist type role again.
Lastly, I'm very excited about this.
I don't know.
Hang on.
I don't know.
I knew she blew up with Obsession. And before that, I think she was on like Superman and Lois or something. I think that's all she's done. And by many accounts on that show, she was kind of milquetoast. But Indy Navarrete is going to play Rogue. And if you saw Obsession, she has a lot of range. Why is this one worry you?
Because I think Indy Navarrete I can't say her name.
Indy Navarrete.
Indy Navarrete.
Yeah.
Her breakout and Obsession was so good that I don't want her to be contractually obligated and limited to the MCU for the rest of her life. I want her to be able to be an actress and do some really amazing things, even though I'm super excited that she got the, you know, part of Rogue, because Rogue, I think, has got some really great storyline to play with. So
she does.
The fit for this is really good, but for her specifically as an actress, I think, oh man, like, I don't know if that like handcuffs her in the future.
Well, I know, Rogue is married to Gambit in the comics. So as long as Gambit stays in line, you know, you don't want him. No. I am worried about the same thing. I feel like she got a one-way ticket to a rocket ship this summer. She could do pretty much anything she wanted. I actually think, as much as a fan of what she did in Obsession, I'm very happy to see her, because it makes me excited for what X-Men can be. I think she's very much like of that culture. Like, she loves video games. She loves comics. I think she's just excited to be part of it. And I get why she took the job, right? I just think, man, she could have wrote her own ticket and done something that would have established her instead of as an ensemble, like made her, you know, was focused more on her, kind of did, you know, something along those lines. But then I think back and I'm like, Jennifer Lawrence was on Cloud 9 when she did X-Men. when she was Mystique. I mean, she, Hunger Games made her a global star, and then she went and did that. So, I mean, it could very much, I mean, that's not fair because those movies aren't that great, but I'm just saying, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, she jumped on the comic book train too. That's when they were much more popular. I think this is a bigger risk now, honestly.
Yeah. And especially because I'm sure she's going to get an Oscar nomination. She damn well could win.
She better get one. She better.
Because I mean, the performance is really, 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 really good.
I mean, it's all anyone talked about all summer. How do you deny? Well, I mean, they do it all the time, I guess, in Hollywood. But I don't know how you deny a nomination short of she's not one of us yet. You know, unless right. you use that.
That's
bullshit.
Seasoned enough. Yeah. Hasn't been around. Hasn't done her time.
Hasn't earned her spot. Bullshit. She's earned it.
That's my fear. I think it's great. She's doing the role. She's going to play the role amazing. I'm super excited. I really hope she has a career after X-Men.
I really hope she's working on other stuff right now. I mean, right now she could, I don't know when they're shooting X-Men. I know it's coming out May 5th, 2028. So they're going to be shooting soon. But I mean, if I were her, I would find a really powerful part, even if it's a small part, and knock something out just so you're relevant before this comes out.
Well, can we also talk about the fact that we got X-Men May 28th. Mm-hmm. We got Lilo and Stitch May 28th. We got live action Tangled March 28th. Like, Disney, you got to spread this shit out, man. People got kids and movies are expensive. And I don't know if you can handle all that all at one time in one quarter.
That is a lot. I'm really surprised about Lilo and Stitch too, and Tangled being so close. I feel like they're going to bleed into each other. I mean, I guess you got all of April and then most of May before that comes out. I don't know, man. That just feels tight to me. But you know what? They're trying to make that money, son. Trying to meet those event movies. We've had a great summer, a great year in theaters this year. I want to keep that going for as long as we can. So keep making event movies. I don't care. Then we've got Ghost Rider has been dated. It's July 28th, 2028. That's Ryan Gosling and Sean Levy directed that as well. So, I mean, that's crazy. When you think about it, they must love each other, right?
The decade of the goss.
Do they love each other or what?
Yeah, pretty much. That's a lot, right? So June 28 is Incredibles 3. July 28 is Ghost Rider. Like, that's a lot of Disney in like 3 months.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. What do you think is going on? Do you think they're just over planning or they're just trying to stay relevant?
I mean, probably trying to stay relevant. Because I mean, I can't think of like Disney stuff that's come out this year off the top of my head.
All right. Well, I am curious. I mean, Sean Levy is just like back-to-back years with Ryan Gosling. What if Starfighter doesn't work? That's going to like crush Ghost Rider to some degree. Maybe not. They're totally different. I guess it'll be fine.
I think Starfighter is going to be exciting. I think people are stoked for it.
I think you need it because I don't think Mandalorian and Grogu. I mean, it made $175 million. I think it made $350 million worldwide. And the budget was like $160 or something like that. So, I mean, they broke even. But it wasn't right. Like Star Wars. But I firmly believe this, Troy. I've said this for a few years now. Star Wars movies should come out at Christmas, period. That is when they rack up. If you look at all the most successful Star Wars movies, they came out at Christmas. There might be one exception. Maybe Rogue One, maybe didn't. But I think they all came out around Christmas. There's something about that's like family time. Summer is more like kids going off and doing their own thing because they have summer off. Christmas is family time. So I think they see things multiple times. They'll tell grandma and grandpa. It's nostalgia. That's Christmas time. Just saying. Star Wars belongs at Christmas.
Speaking of, we didn't even mention the biggest Star Wars news of the weekend.
What?
For the 50th anniversary of Episode 4, A New Hope, which came out in 1977. For the 50th anniversary, they are bringing back to the big screen the original release.
That's right. Yeah.
Not the THX remastered edition, not the gossed up CGI, but you know, Jabba the Hutt with a tail thing. Like, this is the original 1977 print back in the theaters. Like, that's freaking cool.
Does Greedo shoot first?
Well, you have to find out.
He better. He better. I'm just saying he better. He better. I guess I would do that. I would see that. Yeah. I haven't seen it like in a theater since I was a kid, so I probably would. You know it's going to look terrible today, though, right?
No, I mean, if you try to like digitize it on like a giant Dolby screen or IMAX screen, sure. But if you watch it in a standard laser basic theater, like, it'll look great.
Okay, we're going to find out. Black Panther 3 comes out December 15th, 2028. So that's coming out. And we talked about that not too long ago, but T'Challa's son will be in this one.
Excited about it, but at the same time, again, too long, too far removed.
It's been a long time since the second one. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and that's because they didn't tell you about the part of the movie where you get T'Challa's son, because it was at the end credits as the stinger, not actually part of the movie.
I know. That's the weird part. And Shang-Chi still doesn't have a sequel. This poor guy. You know, I mean, give him a movie already. Like, his movie was a hit, and he's like still waiting there going like, when do I get a second one, guys? Come on.
Well, he's like, he's showing up in the Doomsday, isn't he?
Yeah, he's showing up, but there's 40 characters in that thing, and nobody's going to stand out except the people from the last Avengers movies. Hemsworth, you're going to have Downey in a different role. You're going to have Evans in a different role, but the same role, but different, but the same, you know? Ugh. And they keep showing his baby. They better not kill a kid. That's all I'm saying. Or maybe they should. That'll really amp the stakes up. He's fighting to get his kid back through magic or something.
Maybe the kid gets infused with magic and becomes the new villain for Secret Wars.
I'm sure there's a comic connection. I just don't want to dive into it. I just want to be surprised. All right. So we got two more pieces of the D23, the Disney news. Disney Legends, which is basically their honorary Oscar, if you will. Like, it's Disney saying, you are reflective of Disney's values. We really appreciate your contribution to Disney as a whole, as a culture, as a, you know, just the zeitgeist, whatever. And so some of the nominees this year, Anne Hathaway, well-deserved, well-deserved. Dwayne Johnson, of course, you're welcome. Jerry Bruckheimer. Goddamn right. You know, he made a lot of movies with Hollywood Pictures and all that shit. Bob Iger, of freaking course, right? Legend, Bob Iger. But the highlight to me, I don't know if you felt the same way, but Lin-Manuel Miranda, he got one as well. And he sang his acceptance speech. And if you look it up, he used Disney song or Disney tones to do his speech. I thought it was brilliant. The guy is brilliant. I thought that was a brilliant way to do it.
Little Mermaid mixed in with some Hamilton.
Had everything cool in there. Yeah, everything was just, it was a nice little melody. I mean, you could probably put that thing to full music and it would rock. Do you care much about the Disney Legends? I mean, their appreciation of their past heroes or whatever?
No more different than I would appreciate like a Universal or a Paramount or Warner Brothers legend.
So not the at same. All is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that have done great contributions to film over the years. Like, I'd probably look more at, you know, an AFI recognition or an Oscars recognition more than I would look at a Disney recognition.
Sure.
You know,
it's just for the company.
Yeah.
They've been company men and women.
It's to put stuff on the stage to keep the crowd entertained because it's a fan expo. It's for the fans, by the fans.
Absolutely. All right. So last piece of news, in an interview, as Jerry Bruckheimer was walking around that D23, he did confirm that Pirates 6 is in the works, and they've talked to Johnny Depp about reprising his role, and they're trying to get the deal done. The script is being written. They're talking to Johnny. They're trying to get it done. And sources have indicated, this part isn't from Bruckheimer, it's from sources at Deadline and Hollywood Reporter, that Margot Robbie would be the protagonist and Jack Sparrow would be a side character of sorts. Now, if that's all true, I'm excited because that's what made the first Pirates of the Caribbean such a great movie. Is Jack Sparrow is only in it 39 to 45 minutes of that movie. But every time he popped up, it made it like he even got the best, you know, he was nominated for best actor, much like Hannibal Lecter was, even though they had a small role. He was supporting character, but he took over the movie. And I think that's where Jack Sparrow belongs. Do you agree with me on that?
100% agree. Yeah. He moves the story. He isn't the story.
Exactly. There you go. Oh man. Well, let me get to this. This is sad. It's just, there's no other way to say it, but we're moving on from D23 and moving into just sad news. I mean, Hayden Leslie Panettiere is dead at 36. Everybody's going to speculate as to overdose or suicide or whatever, mental health, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to do that. I think what I would like to say is she has been an actor since she was a little kid, if you remember the Titans, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And there, in my mind, it just goes one more step to my personal opinion, which I am coming more into view of with every passing year, is that acting messes kids up. And I don't think there still aren't enough protections for kids like that to be under like 14 or something to be in movies like that.
She was 18 months old when she got her first commercial.
It's just, I mean, and she's talked about it. She wrote a memoir. I mean, you can go read it. It's, I haven't read it. I've read some of it since she passed away, to be honest. I didn't read it before. But man, it's a tragic story. She gave up custody of her daughter. Like, there's a whole lot of personal stuff. And I will not take part of anybody judging her. I just think, like, you don't know. You haven't lived her life. You don't know. So stop it. But people keep doing it. And I think what happened after she died is exactly the kind of pressure that she was talking about when she was alive. Because people won't stop theorizing, commenting, expressing their own opinions on everything. How do you feel? Like, obviously, it seemed like it really impacted you when I was talking to you. Like, this one kind of hit you kind of hard.
Yeah, I mean, I remember her from Remember the Titans. She was just this fiery kid and just so excited about football.
Sweet kid.
And
yeah,
sweet like kid. Just she just added to the movie, which was really great, right? Being the coach's daughter and all that stuff. And then, of course, you know, we're big season one Heroes fans, right? Save the Cheerleader, Save the World. Like, mm-hmm. She came like into the zeitgeist, like screaming, you know, when Heroes hit the ground. And I think it just put her on the map of like, oh my gosh, like there's this like really brilliant like talent in the world that's doing this show, and it's taking it to a whole other level that it's not just a CW teeny bopper sex symbol. Like, she actually has some depth and range in order to play this character and what they're dealing with in Heroes directly. And then to have her then pivot into, you know, working alongside Connie Britton is like
in Nashville.
Yeah, in Nashville. Connie Britton has done so many things, right? Friday Night Lights, Spin City. Like, Connie Britton is like a force to be reckoned with in the acting community, especially when it comes to television shows. So to have Hayden be like side by side with Connie Britton, like, here's like an idol that you can like learn from and work with. And like the Nashville show itself, yeah, soap opera-y, Nashville being what it is. But at the same time, the whole series was like this really a mirror image of what she was going through with substance abuse, mm-hmm. and depression, and how Juliet's character was doing that. Juliet Barnes was her character in Nashville. She's basically the up and coming country star that's taking over Connie Britton's country stardom as she's like phasing out of her career at the record label. If you haven't seen Nashville, I highly recommend checking it out. It's
isn't
really,
that good
really
a show? I never watched that one. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically Connie Britton's like a huge pop star. She's got this like husband divorcee kind of situation. And then Juliet Barnes comes on the scene and, you know, becomes the new shiny bright object. And, you know, they become enemies and then eventually become friends, and they end up working together and they become enemies again. And so it's a great drama filled experience with great, 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 great music. I actually did the Nashville site tour when I was in Nashville, got on the bus and got to go to all the different filming locations, which was
really
cool.
Oh, that's, I didn't know you did that. That's awesome.
I did. And then they used the Bluebird Cafe, where if you're an artist in Nashville, if you get to play at the Bluebird, it's kind of like your up and coming spot. It's like your breakout moment to play the Bluebird. And I actually got to go to the Bluebird on a early career night and watch like four great artists. And I'm just like, I'm here. I'm sitting at the same place that Connie Britton and Juliet Barnes sang songs on this stage. It's like, oh my gosh, like Hayden Panettiere was just sitting right here. So it was cool. Like, if you're a fan of Nashville, it was definitely a cool trip to go out that way. But yeah, just to her life, and then reading some of the memoir and hearing every the press she's been doing since the book came out, and some of the stories and stuff that she dealt with. I mean, it's just tragic to think about the career that she had. But then to know is kind of similar to Britney in a way, where like her mom was the manager of everything, mm-hmm. you know, really no control over her own, you know, estate and person and life. And there's got to be different things that we need to do as far as like Actors Guild to have protections for people that do start out at a young age in this industry.
I mean, there's the obvious stuff that I think goes along with a lot of attractive young girls, the exploitation, the running into predatory behavior. I'm not saying anything specific happened, but she talked about it in her book. That's for her to say, not for me. But I mean, she's had a lot of those. She's publicly talked about a lot of that stuff. She also talked about her postpartum depression and her substance abuse, alcoholism, pill abuse, that sort of thing. And what I think is most important here is, and I keep coming back to this, like, I mean, how many kids have to have like Sure, you get some that come through, and they come through swimmingly. Ryan Gosling was a Disney kid. Justin Timberlake, Disney kid. You know, there are some that come through, and they end up having what seem like normal lives, right? But there are so many that
as you mentioned, two males.
Of course, sure, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's definitely harder on young girls, right? It's definitely harder, and I don't think it's. At some point, we got to kind of look at that and say, how much do we need this kind of entertainment? And I get having some, you know, family entertainment for kids and whatnot. But man, at some point, I just feel like we got to have an age cap or limit on this for kids that can work in the industry. I don't know what that number is. I don't know how you do it, but I just don't feel like they're protecting kids enough, because it just leads to lifelong struggles, and they never get the chance. And I know a lot of people don't feel sorry for them because you got all that money and all that fame, but like you said, they might never even get near it. You know, they might not even touch it. Look how messed up Shia is. Look how messed up, you know, so many of these young actors are. And at some point, you just got to acknowledge that maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe we should say, you know what? I get it. We can't have our Stranger Things, and we just have to say, but I'm better without it, because it doesn't hurt a bunch of kids. Because some kid doesn't. Not that anything happened to any of the strangers. I'm just using that as an example, right? Because there's a bunch of kids in that show. But there have been so many examples of kids being hurt. There either have to be stricter guidelines, stricter rules, or something, because it just keeps happening to these young actors. And it's especially terrible.
We lost both Ice Princesses, right? Michelle Trachtenberg also.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's only 20 years old. Like, that movie was 20 years ago. It's not like it was 40 years ago or something. Like, man, it's a recent movie.
Poor Kim Cattrall. That's got to be hard. I mean, sincerely, I'm not trying to make a joke. Like, that's got to be hard. Oof.
And that's a really interesting point, right? You think about what Kim Cattrall and Joan Cusack was in that as well. Like, for them to go through what they went through, like, as women coming up in the 80s and then having, you know, now Hayden and Michelle, you know, no longer with us. I wonder what the perspective of Joan and Kim are as female actors coming up in the business, and like any compare and contrast or things that they think they might have could have done better, or, you know. It'd be an interesting biopic to dig into.
It would. No matter what, it's just tragic.
Yeah.
I hope she's at rest. So let's get into our From the Outside In topic. All right. So this is going to be a short one, guys, because I'm really just, I'm not my hero.
He's just gloating. That's what he is.
I'm just gloating. I'm going to give you just a couple clips of the panel. You want the full panel? I'm going to put it on Patreon. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you will get the full Kurt Russell experience, if you will. And there were cool surprises, because I'll tell you in a minute. So here's what happened. Do you want to hear my story?
Amanda said, "You're going to go see Kurt Russell." And he went, "Oh my God," and peed his pants on the spot.
I did. I wet myself. I wore a diaper to this thing. It worked out great. No, I mean,
mostly for the drive that he had to do from his house to get into Chicago.
For anyone that doesn't know, I don't know if you've ever listened to this podcast and don't know, Kurt Russell's my favorite actor. Maybe one of my favorite people on the planet. I don't know why. And I call him a movie daddy, because he helped raise me when I was younger. You know, I was always watching movies.
Because he shook the pillars of heaven. That's why.
Oh, he did. He did. Check is in the mail. He was just the guy that was always with me, like throughout my childhood, throughout my adulthood. He's still there. Like, he's still popping up in things I love. I absolutely love him. He's my favorite actor of all time. The day he dies, we'll probably have a whole episode. Even though this podcast isn't on the air anymore, I'm still going to have a freaking episode for it. I love Kurt Russell. So Amanda also knows that I am cheap. I just cannot spend money. I've never spent money on an autograph or a signing. I just don't really care much about that stuff. As much as I love movies, I don't care about the celebrity part as much. I mean, yeah, it's cool meeting Alan Ritchson and some of the other names I could drop right now, but I'm not gonna. Troy, James Spader,
Megan Boone.
Yeah. Does she count anymore? I don't know.
She was excited to meet us.
That's true. She was. She was very lovely. But Amanda, so she sprung the cash for this thing, and it wasn't cheap. I'm not gonna tell you how much it was, but I'm telling you, I wouldn't have spent it on her. So it was very, very nice of her to do that. And she got me the photo op and the panel, because you could actually get a gold ticket that got you basically front row access to the panel. Or you could take a chance and, you know, do the back of the line kind of thing. I think she wanted to make sure I actually got to see him, which I did. I was in like the second row. But it was at the Fan Expo in Chicago, which you talked about. And I don't like going to those much anymore, just because I'm getting older and it's so crowded. It's just like every other convention. Have you been to that one? The Fan Expo?
Well, I mean, it's
you've been to C2E2.
Fan Expo, Wizarding World, that kind of like changed names over the years. But I've been to C2E2, and C2E2 was like
insane.
Many people.
Same thing. I think it was at the same place. Was it the Rosemont?
No, because C2E2 is at McCormick downtown.
Okay. I don't even know. I hate Chicago. I hate going to Chicago. I don't like all those people. The people are lovely. It's the crowd. I don't mean the people. It's the crowd.
Yeah.
So I go and I have a photo op, and then I've got a 5-hour window before the panel, which is a lot. So I actually, thanks to Troy, I didn't have to pay for parking because he gave me a brilliant idea. He's like, well, just go to AMC and get them to validate your parking. And I did, and also saw Spider-Man for a second time. Still love it. Great day. But I did my photo op, and man, I got to tell you, it was a wonderful experience. It's really cool to see him and to meet him. But I don't like how they do it because you only get to see him for like a minute. You know, you come in like cattle. You know, you're waiting for your turn. He's sitting in a chair. They have a no touch rule. Can't touch him. So keeps him safe from people like me, right? No mauling. He's in a chair situated like he's on the throne. Like he's, you know, just hanging out in Westeros on his throne. And you get to stand next to him and get your picture taken, which I did. And you can tell I was giddy as a little kid in the picture, but, which I'll use on the website post. I don't care. I don't care how goofy it looks. And so, got to go in and tell him how much I love his work, which I appreciated that. But unfortunately, once you get in there, that's it. And then you're out. Like I'm not kidding. Like you're in, you're out. This thing is not cheap and you don't even get more than a minute to say hi to the guy you know, I wouldn't say worship, but admired most of your life. Right. That part was disappointing in a way, but I was so happy. I got to get a picture with him and got to say some words to him. And then I got to go see Spider-Man again, so that rocked. And then I came back into the panel, and the panel is where it really got cool, because what he did was he had an hour panel, roughly 45 minutes to an hour, whatever the number is, where he just kind of spoke about his career, and it was moderated by Jake from Jake's Takes. He's a little too radio for me, you know, a little too, hey guys, welcome, with the, you know, whatever. But he did a fine job moderating. I could have done it better. But Kurt Russell went through and just shared stories, gave, you know, kind of cleared some air and really talked about why he had never done this before, why he doesn't do conventions. I mean, he's gone to like Comic-Con to promote movies and stuff, but he hasn't really done the photo op, you know, the whole fan expo kind of experience. He hadn't done that because he's always kind of shied away from it. He doesn't, what he said, these are his words, is that he didn't like how, people would take his autograph and sell it. He doesn't like that part of the business. And so this kind of reminded him of the fans that he admired and he respected and he appreciated. And it was very kind of, it seemed very genuine in terms of why he came around to the idea. He said his son Wyatt actually talked him into doing this. And he's so happy that he did because it was a good experience. And that surprised me a little bit because when you see that, you know, that assembly line going through for the pictures, I mean, that had to be exhausting. I mean, that just has to be exhausting to have all these people. And you really don't say much to them. Yeah, hey, thanks. Get out. You know, that sort of thing. And then he had a cool surprise. Yeah, he talked for a good solid 30, 40 minutes, whatever it was. And then he brought out Keith David from The Thing and John Carpenter, the director he made 5 movies with. That was a great surprise.
That's a great surprise.
I'm
jealous now.
It was so cool. Now, granted, John Carpenter, he's up there. You know, he hasn't made a good movie in a long time, but he's still made some fantastic movies, and especially movies that were pivotal to my childhood. And it was wonderful to have him there as part of it as well. And it just, all in all, it ended up becoming just a very amazing experience that I recommend anyone does for anyone that they're a fan of. And even though it's not something I would probably spend my money on, because I'm who I am, I absolutely understand why people spend so much. And what I mean by that, or what I add to that before I stop talking, what I loved is being in the line. It kind of reminded me of, you know, going to Comic-Con and going to C2E2 and going to South By, like in the early years and stuff, just in the line, talking about your shared memories with people for, you know, like an hour. I mean, we talked about our favorite Kurt Russell movies and memories and things that were important. The last movie I saw with my entire immediate family, my brother, my kids, my mom and dad, was a Kurt Russell movie. It was The Hateful Eight. That's the last movie we all saw together in a theater. And, you know, and I did get to tell Kurt Russell that my whole family loves you. Like, from mom down to kids, like we're all big fans. And that was, I'm glad that I got to have that basic conversation and got to have that moment. It was a great experience.
I'm always curious, particularly with, you know, whether it be voices or, you know, if someone dropped $1 billion and said, hey, turn into Snake Plissken, like,
$1 million? Well, anybody got $1 million? I'm working that real hard. I've got my eye out for it. That's a lot of money, man.
Is it possible to do it like that, or is it legit like, no, you got to give me a minute?
Yeah, no, I don't have that ability to, like, because you, I don't know, you get into it, you know, and you start thinking about it, and then you, there's also for any character you're playing, I find that there's key words and key phrases and key thoughts that never fail you, you know, that can help you out.
Yeah, like a way in?
Exactly.
Yeah. When it comes to, I mean, I honestly think Snake Plissken is one of the greatest character designs of all time.
That's an interesting one.
It was tough.
That was tough because I don't know why, but I quickly had a vision of what he looked like and the way he was. And John had written the screenplay so succinctly that it was easy to see that. But I couldn't get the sound. And I was listening to this album from a band called Kraftwerk. From the Kraftwerk. And it just to me, at the time, you have to go back to 1980, of course, none of you weren't around then. But it was like, you know, 1980, there was, Kraftwerk was, it was very futuristic sounding. And of course, in 1980, we were doing 1997, so that was quite far into the future for the thinking of it. And I do remember listening to Kraftwerk and then beginning to get a feel for that time period. What would that feel? And what would be the things that we could connect up to that would make sense and not get too, it would fit John's vision. And so, I was just reading the script and talking to John. And then Lee Van Cleef was cast.
Woo!
Yeah. And I just went, oh, now I know what to do. If Lee Van Cleef is going to be Hauk, I'm gonna sound like that.
Kurt, you can't tell me that you have an inability to slide into characters and then the entire panel. Because I'm just gonna just start listing them all out. I'm a big fan of a very specific type of movie. It's where two people who clearly do love each other play roles where they hate each other. And I think you and Goldie in Overboard. The most fun chemistry to watch because you're so good at hating each other.
It was an interesting thing because Goldie was working with Thea Silberg, who was her partner at the time, and Goldie and I had been together for a number of years. We decided fairly quickly in our relationship that just because we were in love with each other and we wanted to live with each other, etc., it wasn't a reason to have to work together. We didn't do similar type movies. I mean, the Goldie Hawn movies are Goldie Hawn movies, and the movies I was doing a lot of at the time with John Carpenter were not, you know, a long way from Foul Play. So it was different. I just thought of something, but it's like, the first time we were together, in that, just to give you the depth of that, somebody said, you should play that movie that Kurt did. It was recent, you know, it was just before we met. And I said, nah, I'm not so sure about that. But Goldie's mom was there. She said, I want to see it. Goldie's mom was very basic, very real, salt of the earth. She had a great voice and she kind of talked. I want to see it. The movie was The Thing. And about 20 minutes into the movie, after the thought, she literally said, I'm sorry, I can't watch this. So that was we weren't doing the same kind of things. So, but Goldie and Anthea were looking at some scripts, and Anthea said, hey, can you read this as a sample for sample for something we're thinking of doing. I said, sure. So I was just doing that. I was reading it, and I was reading the script. I don't forget what the working title was. And I said, well, we're not, this is like written for us. And it was. And she had written the two characters in Overboard with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell as her template characters, even though it wasn't being sent to her for that purpose. And I said to Anthea, I said, you guys should both read this. That's pretty good. I think it's really funny. So we'll see. And we ended up, they loved it, so we ended up doing the movie together.
You have a line delivery in that movie where you see her on TV, I believe. And then I believe you say something along the lines of, it's the bitch! You ever deliver a line and then in the back of your mind go, yeah, that was really good.
No, actually. I surprise myself sometimes. I surprised myself in Tombstone one time.
Also,
there was the moment where the brothers are now, one brother was killed and now the Sam Elliott is leaving on the train. And Wyatt Earp, who was just an entrepreneur, he just wanted to make money, and finally this thing had come to a crushing finale of death and destruction, and everything in his life was gone wrong. And he just wanted to kill somebody. He just done with these guys. And so now we're coming up there tonight. I forget how the scene went exactly, but finally Ike is down on the ground, and I got my spur on, and I grip his chin with the spur. And I say, run, you Kurt. And so he takes off and running. And the line was, you tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and it was a line reading that came out of my mouth that I didn't, I was like, no, and it's not, I realized the thinking that went behind it is not, you tell him I'm coming. You tell him I'm coming. That's a bad deal. In other words, you have fucked with the wrong cowboy. And now you call down the thunder, and now you got it. And that was out of my mouth, man. You tell him I'm coming, and he's coming with me. And it was like, yeah, I did say, that's actually what should be said. That's what it is. So I was like, thank you. Got it just in time.
That's one of the great posters of all time, and the only thing I think that could make it better is the tagline, you fucked with the wrong cowboy.
You ever met your hero?
The only ones that I've met in person were, I won't call them like heroes, like Kurt Russell's a hero to you, but I got to meet Jenny Garth, and I was smitten.
Aww.
Like I was, very early teenage boy. So I'm like, hell yeah, Jenny Garth. I get to meet Jenny Garth. That's amazing.
And she ran. She called the police, got a restraining order.
I got to meet Glenn Morshower from 24. Aaron.
I remember that. Yeah.
That was a great interview. Really had a good time talking with him. I met Greg Grunberg, probably the closest to my hero, J.J. Abrams, that I'll get since One Degree of Separation. Greg
is friends,
best friend. I got to meet Adrian Palicki from Friday Night Lights, Tyra.
That or was, from John Wick to me.
Or from John Wick, or from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or from Orville.
Sure.
Yeah, that was a really great conversation about, again, females working in the industry and at a young age and coming up and that kind of stuff. And then when she winked at me at the end of the interview, I was like, I'm good. I can go any day.
She probably amazing. Had a twitch.
Yeah, that's
probably,
what it was.
She probably had a twitch. She's like, ah, hey, allergies. Damn it.
She looked at me and said, Texas forever. And I was like, I'm good.
Oh, that's cool.
Who else? We met a bunch of people that weekend. We met John Noble that weekend.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, probably at closest there.
There's a lot of heroes, man. I'm just like, what's your biggest experience, I guess?
I had a really, really, really good weekend that weekend, I guess, in the middle of a 5.8 earthquake, mind you, in Oklahoma. So don't think that earthquakes don't happen in the middle of this country. And we also met, Daniel LaRusso, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yep. And I didn't get to meet Billy. You got to meet Billy.
I got to drink with Billy.
You had to drink a Billy.
Yeah, Billy. Yeah. Billy Zabka. Yep, sure did. Yep.
But I met Ralph Macchio. That was a nice conversation. Got his autograph. It was cool.
He's a very nice guy.
Got my Karate Kid poster signed, wax on, wax off.
Did you? I didn't know you did that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, just an 8x10. Nothing fancy. It was cool. I mean, like you talk to people over the years, you meet people over the years. They're just people, you know, you talk to them like people. And I think that's how we got all the people we did, at the Oklahoma event. When we got like Glenn and Adrian and mm-hmm. Greg, right. We're just a bunch of us running around. Ruthie Rink, who was with us on the podcast cruise. Ruthie did a great job, like hounding people down and having them come down and get interviews. And yeah, it was a really, really good time. Just talking to people as people, you know, how'd you get into this? Why do you like doing this?
It's very exciting.
Do you use a lot of hand sanitizer?
Well, it's funny that I finally got the chance to meet him. I've tried to meet Kurt Russell over the years. And I'm not one that normally does that. I'm normally the guy that avoids that sort of thing. So it was other than interviews are different to me. I mean, that's just something I'm doing for the betterment of the podcast. I've had a lot of great interviews over the years, but and met with a lot of cool actors and had cool experiences. But you know, Kurt Russell, I got the fan out. I was a fan. I got to be a fan. I didn't have to be a podcaster or an interviewer. I just got to be a fan and geek out. And I'll always thank Amanda for that experience. That was pretty awesome. So thanks, Amanda, even though you don't listen to the podcast and you couldn't show up today. Now let's go into what you've been watching. Is there anything you want to mention that you recently saw?
I saw The Six, the musical, the pro shots that took place in theaters this past weekend. Obviously not as popular as Hadestown.
Oh, no. I thought it was going to blow up just like that one, but it did not.
Yeah. It did not. The theater was a lot less people on Friday night than I anticipated. And for a while, it was actually just me and my friend in the show by ourselves.
Well, that's too bad.
Until like maybe about 2 hours before the movie, and then there were some people that joined us. But it was actually really cool because they had so for those that don't know, Six is about the six wives of Henry VIII. It's a 90-minute rock concert where they basically sing their story of what happened to them. And they're basically trying to create a band of the six of them, and you're trying to figure out who's going to be like the lead singer. So you vote as the audience on who did the best sob story, basically.
Sure.
At the end of the show. But done super well on Broadway, still on Broadway today. But the original cast was in London. And this pro shot is the original London Queens 10 years later. And they got back together. And so there was this like 15-minute pre-show with the writer, creators of Six, right? The two of them. Had great conversations with them, how they came up with the concept and the idea for the show. They talked to all the queens and like what their experiences were as far as like growing up with the show and people just being super excited to see him again. And that was cool to have like a little bit of backstory about Six the musical itself, rather than just going in and watching the show, because the show is only 90 minutes long. That's always been my complaint with the show, is that you pay a typical Broadway theater ticket price for a 2.5-hour performance for only 90 minutes. So it is very fast paced, very quick. You can pretty much listen to the entire Broadway. I can't remember if it's the Broadway one or if it's the London one, but one of them is the entire show on disc. So you don't have to see the show. You can just listen to that and you get the whole thing, snark and all the in-betweens. It was a good time. We had a blast. All the snark was there. The costumes were amazing. Songs were great. Really well done pro shot again. I think pro shot is definitely the way to go to get people more excited about Broadway and get it more accessible to people that can't pay, you know, hundreds of dollars to go see the show at the actual theater. Mm-hmm. I also, thanks to Instagram, ran across a clip of an old Margot Robbie movie that I never even heard about. And then I found out that Rachel McAdams was also in this movie.
I mean, it's really a Rachel McAdams movie. It's not really a Rachel McAdams movie.
But I saw the clip was a Margot Robbie clip, right? Probably because of the tie-in with X-Men. So she was in the algorithm. Rachel McAdams is in the movie. And it's really more about this family in London. And it's about the men.
You want to tell you what the title is?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Okay.
Because it's about time travel. So the men in this family can time travel, just the men. And so the movie is actually called About Time. Mm-hmm. So you can take that in 100 different ways, right? Well, it's about time he got a girlfriend. Well, it's about time he made up with his sister. It's about time, you know, his dad stopped drinking. You know, there are all kinds of story threads you can pull on. And I thought initially it was just going to be a rom-com, and it was about him, you know, using his time travel abilities in order to get the girl. And I was going to be really angry at that because, like, can men be more douchey than actually, like, exploiting their time travel capability?
Sure.
But the movie takes a completely different turn than I expected, and I was in my feels by the end of the movie.
It's a very sweet movie. I saw
pretty
it
deeply,
a long
actually.
Time ago.
Yeah, it's a 2013 first time I've seen it. So yeah, if you haven't checked out About Time, highly recommend. Great watch.
Well, good.
I'd give it a solid 7.5.
I like when people find things like that. I mean, it's been out for a while, but you just finally saw it and you still gave it a chance. You could watch 1,000 new things, and instead you found. Yeah, that's a great movie.
It was new to me.
Yeah.
So could have came out today. I wouldn't have known any different.
One that I saw, I saw it before our episode came out last week, but I just didn't have time to put the interview or the review in. But I saw The End of Oak Street. And if you don't know what this is, it's a sci-fi film. I don't know if I'd call it, well, I guess, yeah, there's time travel involved, right? It takes place in 1982, and you've got a couple, Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor. They're basically on the verge of divorce, and their kids are off being like kids are, just jackasses. And then one night, in the middle of the night, their house has an experience, and they wake up in basically Jurassic Park. But it's actually the prehistoric era. They're stuck in the prehistoric era. It's a crazy story, and they have to survive. And then they're trying to find a way. Is there a way home? What happened? And you're going through all of that. There is a lot of violence. There's a lot of, I mean, the dinosaur attacks are pretty vicious in certain spots. I mean, there was a moment where I'm like, is this thing rated R? Because it felt very rated R in a couple spots. There are some pretty good surprises as well. I won't say what they are, but the movie.
There were Slee Stacks.
Maybe. This was produced by J.J. Abrams, so you know you'll like it. It's directed by David Robert Mitchell, who did It Follows, which is why I was hesitant walking into it. But man, I had a great time. Like, it takes place in 1982, so you already know it's paying homage to the Amblin era, you know, that Spielberg era, that early, you know, sci-fi whimsy, E.T. and things like Goonies.
Super 8.
Yeah. Just all those kinds of films. And it definitely has that vibe, and it's a very family-focused film, but it's also willing to be scary, like Gremlins and Jurassic Park and those kinds of things. Like, it's willing to take chances and take out characters if need be. And I love that. I love that sense of danger. I love the sense of family. I really just enjoyed that. And I think when people hear Amblin, they're thinking, oh, it's wholesome and happy. And no, there's definitely some darkness. Like, it reminds me a lot of Gremlins. Like, Gremlins is fun, but it's dark as hell. Like, people die. Like, it is not a all pleasant movie. Like, bad things happen.
It gets nuked in the microwave.
Yeah, there's lots of things that
the
happen.
The theater burns down.
I mean, there's things that happen to these characters. They get run through the ringer. So I was very surprised with how much I enjoyed it. I actually got to check it out with Brian from former Ho from The Hollywood Outsider. We and I both got to see it. And I mean, we had a great time. It felt like seeing a movie from our childhood. And I think you would love it too, Troy. I mean, I think you would really, really kind of
That's on my
one.
List for this coming weekend.
So I would give it $8. I would think if $10 is full price of admission, I'd give it $8. I was very surprised with how much I enjoyed it, especially since I didn't like It Follows that much, which David Robert Mitchell directed as well. This feels like a completely different movie. And at the end, he basically does a thank you to his dad that he made this movie for his dad. And it feels like, I get why this movie feels like my childhood now. Like, it feels like he came up in the same generation as me and definitely love the same kinds of movies, but. Some good moments. There's definitely some moments where I'm like, wow, where the character's thinking, and I hope they get eaten. But you want that in a dinosaur movie. You want people that you want to get eaten. That's just part of it. Also saw Lanterns, which is the new HBO Max series, DC's latest, right, where it follows Hal Jordan, played by your boy, Kyle Chandler, from Friday Night Lights. And he's kind of, you know, a little bit more edgy. Hal Jordan, and then you've got Aaron Pierre, who's playing John Stewart, who's kind of like training to be a Green Lantern, and they come to this small town in Kansas where something's going, I won't tell you really anything, but something's going on, and they need to get to the bottom of it, and there's a mystery established, right? In Kansas, of course.
In Kansas. Yes. I wonder what else is going on in Kansas around this time.
If there's a tornado that shows up, look out. Look out for them ruby slippers. they do some nonlinear storytelling. There is some flip flopping in and out of time. So pay, you know, you do have to pay attention. This isn't like background TV. I did enjoy it. It's definitely the grittier version. Feels very Zack Snyder-esque in some respects, but I do think it was a, I watched the first episode. It was a very strong start. We'll see where it goes from here. That's what I would say.
There's just one episode in so far.
That I've seen, yeah. Now, by the time you listen to this, the second episode's probably out. But it's on HBO Max, and I definitely recommend it. And you don't have to be a comic book fan. That's the one thing that drove me. Like, I'm not a Green Lantern fan, so I don't want to have to watch this and have to know all the freaking lore. And I think they do a pretty good job. You know, the ring makes you, you know, whatever you visualize come true. You can create weapons or even money at one point to play a jukebox. So, I mean, there's a lot of uses of the ring, but only one person can hold the ring at a time. And right now it's Hal Jordan, who's Kyle Chandler. So it's, and by the end of it, you do get like a cool kind of surprise ending that takes the series in a different direction. And I highly recommend, once you finish the episode, don't watch the, here's what's coming up on this season of Lanterns, because it spoils way too much. Just roll with it. It's good. Good show. Not great, but it's good. That's it, buddy. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Do you have any heroes you want to meet before?
I mean, I'd love to shake JJ's hand at some point.
See if we can make that happen. Will it into the universe. You know, JJ, call Troy.
Jennifer Garner. Be cool to meet Jennifer Garner.
For the right reasons?
Yeah. To be like, thank you for Alias. It was so great.
Just making sure it wasn't creepy. That's all.
And
I
grew up with her on Felicity initially. So like, she was really good on Felicity as well.
And she still seems like a lovely person.
And she just put out another new show, like just recently.
Five Star Weekend.
Yeah, Five Star Weekend. Yeah. Which my wife said was really good. So I got to go check it out.
With Timothy Oliphant, who never fails. I just started watching Lucky on Apple TV, your favorite, Apple TV.
Lucky's next on my list as well.
It's very much just the Chase show, but I'm digging it so far. You know, I'm still a little early, so I don't really want to speak to it until I kind of get through it, but.
I know I get my paycheck and stuff from Apple, but like I can only do two Apple shows at once. So I got Silo and Ted right now, you know, then I'll move into Lucky and Five Star Weekend. And
Dark Matter's coming back.
Oh, yeah. Mm, so excited.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going to go and just sit in a dark room and listen to that Kurt Russell panel over and over. So I want to thank everybody for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. We'll be back next week with our summer movie. Nope. Summer Entertainment Awards. So come back next week. Hopefully Amanda will show up. We'll see if we can duct tape her ass into a chair and make sure she's here for the awards. Bye.